Then the battle unfolded in my mind. Her guards had been skilled, quick, and deadly. One by one I killed them, while giving up some ground and moving deeper into the castle. Finally, the golden elven and I were the only ones left. She might have actually killed me. Her attacks were a clever mix of wild strikes, elegant sweeps, and precise stabs. By then, my weapons had been reduced to notched saw blades, and one shattered when she blocked it with her decoratively etched sword. Neither of us expected the weapon to snap, but I was quicker to react and slammed the remaining part of the blade into her chest. "May the dead gods damn you, O Barney. We could have had so much together," she whispered into my ear with a blood-soaked voice as I laid her gently on the ground. "I am sorry," I remembered saying to her. "I meant it." Then I closed her eyelids, grabbed replacement swords from the guards I had killed, and moved to find Jesme. The princess was in the kitchen. We went out into the courtyard, right into the Empress's trap. Then my memories stopped making sense. "I'm having problems remembering," I said to Virnine, while my brain struggled to understand the rest of my memory. I wore my skull-emblazoned armor. The images of elvens blurred with images of my fellow O'Barney, and then morphed into images of other beings I did not recognize, who wore armor I had never seen. She was important to our people, more so than you can probably imagine. Take the ovule and leave this world, Kyaer. "No," I spat out. My skull started to hurt again, the ache that I was all too familiar with. "Don't be a fool. I have more than 30 warriors here." My head swam with more recollections. It almost felt like there were two sets of concurrent memories in my mind. Then there were three. The pain in my head was unbearable. My vision grew dark. I was either going to faint or smash my skull against the rock of the courtyard to end the agony. I searched for something in my past to stabilize the waves of pain and confusion, to give me shelter amidst the torment of death I had inflicted, loves I had betrayed, people I had destroyed. Then I found it, something to ground and focus my life around. The anguish disappeared, replaced with hope. "Take me back to the Empress. I want something else from her." "No," Virnine crossed her arms. In the starlight, I saw her glance over to the warriors she had stationed on the wall. I heard a set of boots move in our direction, but it didn't concern me now. "Then we don't have much else to discuss. I reject her offer. I will not be leaving this world." "Then you will die here." Virnine's hand moved to her sword hilt. The pewter-haired elven's voice reminded me of Islata's before her guards battled me. The tone convinced me that she would allow me to change my mind. She wanted me to change it. She did not want to kill me. Neither had Islata. "You couldn't kill me at the castle. What makes you think you can kill me here?" "Because now we realize you are the destroyer, and we know how to defeat you," the newcomer's words called out from the direction of the wall. I recognized the voice, and felt a chill move down my spine. "Come and dance with me, Kyaer. My sword hungers for your neck again. This time you will not return from the dead." The moon's light caught on Fehalda's white hair and pale skin. In her dark black armor, she looked like a ghost. Bowstrings twanged in unison, and I jumped back, twisting in the air and praying that none of the arrows found their mark. I landed next to a stone bench, which provided me cover from the archers, but was exposed to the advancing sprint of Fehalda and Virnine. I took another gamble and leapt over the bench, dashing toward the switchback that led from the keep to the city at the foot of the mountains. Another set of bowstrings twanged, and dozens of arrows bounced around me like missed raindrops. I rounded the corner of one tower and skidded to a halt. I was safe from the arrows here, but a new problem presented itself. The gates to the fortress were still locked, of course, but the gatehouse exit I planned on using to escape was now guarded by the shadows of dozens of elven archers. Nadia's keep had become the perfect prison, and I had stumbled into it like a fool. The archers at the gate were ready for me, and this time a few arrows did find their marks.
Chapter 9. Aelorathi. "Enter," I shouted after the knock sounded on the door of my suite. Royara walked in and smiled before bowing briefly. As usual, her elaborate dress was impeccably clean, and her hair was styled perfectly. "Your half-brother has arrived, mistress. Do you wish to receive him here?" "Yes, that will be fine. Have food brought. Your suitors and maidens are also downstairs in the lobby. Do you wish for them to join you both for breakfast?" "No, they can wait for my morning ride to begin. My half-sibling would carry news from my mother's land and communication from my contacts there. I had no desire to introduce him before I received this information." "Very well, I will bring him up." I turned back to my mirror and gestured to one of my half-dozen servants to finish my hair. They knew that I would dismiss them once my brother arrived, so they quickly finished and cleaned up the tools they had used to dress and groom me. I heard the door to my suite open, and then Reliara's hushed instructions. Footsteps sounded across the floor of my foyer, and I turned to see my brother when he walked into my bedroom. "Sister, it is quite good to see you again." Grednil's scent was just as I recalled, burnt tobacco layered with dust and horseshit from his long journey here. He looked the same, with his long onyx hair and light amber eyes. His features were the opposite of my sister, Nayarathi, but they were both attractive. "I reciprocate the emotions, brother." I linked fingers with him briefly, and we nodded to each other. He wore the red and muted yellow colors of my mother's tribe, but the leather garments were dusty from the weeks of travel he endured to reach my father's lands. "Please, sit with me in my receiving room. Breakfast will be brought, and you can tell me what passes for news in the Giantalist lands." Grednil and I were never close. In fact, I thought him to be only a few steps above the most idiotic of my mother's people. But he was loyal to Nayarathi, and my sister was the only individual I felt that I could trust. "Ah, sister, it pains me to think you only care for the news I bring, and not for my personal feelings." He laughed and took a seat at the table. I sat across from him, and my servants poured glasses of water. "I did offer you breakfast. Most of the time when someone has information I want, I just torture them until they give it to me." I smiled at him and glanced over his shoulder as Reliara and three other servants brought in large silver trays. "This is true. Should I take this to mean that you've learned some manners while you've been living out in the country?" He laughed again, and I smiled to keep myself from crushing my crystal glass of water into his face. Grednil teased to show affection, and he was too stupid to realize I didn't care for it. I hated it. Reliara set her tray down between us and made hand gestures to the other servants that instructed their placement of their trays. Once the platters were placed, the lids were pulled to present an ample breakfast of eggs, ham, beef, yogurt, sweet cakes, and orange fruit. There was enough to feed a dozen people. I guess that Reliara must have been trying to impress my half-brother with the display. "They feed you well here, sister. I haven't seen a meal like this since you left. Perhaps the western tribes aren't as barbaric as I assumed." The six servants stationed in my room and the three that accompanied Reliara converged on the table. Their hands moved with a fluid efficiency and poured each of us tea, coffee, juice, and buttered a few of the sweet rolls within seconds. Grednil's eyes opened wide at the presentation of their silent skills and let out a slow whistle when they had finished putting the meal on our plates. "Impressive. No human slaves?" "No, I cannot stand the scent of them. We have some in the stables next to the house, but I avoid the other places in the estate where they work." I turned to Reliara and nodded to her. The woman made another gesture with her hands, and my servants glided out the door. After they had left, she sat in a leather chair in the corner of the room and picked up some embroidering while she listened to our conversation. My brother and I ate in silence for a few minutes. His appetite confirmed the report about his journey here. How were your travels? Uneventful? I asked to see if he still lied with the same predictable pattern. His caravan had been attacked the first week of their travels by the Triauk tribe, and they had lost a quarter of their warriors. We had a small issue outside of the Giantilis lands, nothing that I couldn't handle. I nodded and confirmed the brief scent of his half-truth. I would need to determine why my mother sent him. I already had some theories. Do you bring any written word? I pushed back my plate and drank from the cup of buttered coffee. Of course I do, dear sister. I would have hoped that you would be interested in the latest spoken word I bring as well. He sighed heavily and reached into his coat pocket, producing a bundle of letters wrapped in cream-colored silk cording. He tossed the stack to me casually. I am interested in that as well. What is the news? He probably couldn't smell my own lie. At one time, I cared about the various political skirmishes of my mother's people. I would have planned with Nyarathi, and we would have extorted or positioned ourselves to gain favors. Now I only partially listened to his endless drivel. Fortunately, Gretna loved the sound of his own voice and didn't seem to notice my lack of attention. The real information would be contained in the letters that rested in my lap. I just needed a few hours tonight to sort through them. Mistress, I am sorry to interrupt. Rolyara approached the table from behind me. She must have realized I desired a break. My mistress has companions waiting for her below. Perhaps you wish to freshen up from your travels and then join them for their daily activities?
Companions? Does my sister have another entourage of suitors?
Gretnell raised an eyebrow at me, and his scent switched from a bitter hop annoyance to honeysuckle in a flash. Of course, that is my purpose here. I also have a following of adoring females that might be interested in meeting my half-brother. I smiled at him.
Well, then I guess I should bathe and then meet them. Are you still writing?
No, I've been busy with other projects here. I tried to hide the longing from my voice and scent, but I probably failed. The last 2 years since my arrival have been quite tiresome. I had thought that my father's elders would be easy to manipulate, but they had all proven more difficult than expected. There had been several assassination attempts that I had to investigate. One or more of the elders wished me dead, and while I had some guesses as to who they were, it was too early to make a move. It didn't help that I was constantly being berated by my father and the elders to breed as soon as possible with the dozens of suitors that had arrived to lay claim to my reproductive system. I longed to ride again. But I feared, once I felt the freedom that being atop a horse gave me, I would continue past the gates and never return. Just as I forced most of the suitors to leave.
And what of your art? Are you still painting?
I recall you had moved to charcoal works before you left. Sister still has the drawing you did of her hanging in her room. No, no painting. I have been focusing instead on the martial arts, sword and polearm training, as well as archery.
I can't imagine that these people have anything to teach you.
He stood up from the table and cleaned his mouth with a cloth napkin. It is a way to pass the time. I shrugged my shoulders. I had been pleasantly surprised by the trainers my father employed. My martial skills had always been excellent, but the fear of assassination had added an extra sense of urgency to my training that had never been present when I lived in my mother's lands. Riding and painting had been replaced by the unfortunately necessary task of perfecting the art of fighting for my life.
Where shall I room? I can freshen up in the next quarter of an hour, if you will wait for me.
Valdiara will take you there. I will wait. I nodded to the beautiful woman, but she was already directing him out of my suite with her subtle, elegant gestures. When he left, I sorted through the stack of letters. Most of them were garbage. Notes from previous suitors or others who adored me. There might be small political insights to gain from reading them, but I doubted it would be worth my time. I pulled out the letters from my mother and sister. I opened my mother's first.
Daughter, I am not surprised by your last letter. You have brought this upon yourself with your brash and irrational resistance to our customs. We have spoken of this so often, I tired of hearing the same words come from my mouth, knowing they would be ignored. Now I tire of writing them. I still do not understand your resistance.
Had you performed your duty to our tribe and race, you would have not been exiled to your father's lands. I expect a letter informing me of your pregnancy. Until then, do not waste my time with useless communication. Gentlest. Fuck her. The paper burst into flames in my hand instantly. I crushed the black page into my fist, and the pain of the fire scorching my palm distracted me from the numbness in my chest. Of course she wouldn't care about the attempts on my life. She was rid of me, and since I had not chosen to breed with a member of her tribe, my value to her had ended. If I died, she would be relieved of the burden, and the shame of it would be on my father's family instead of her own. The scent of my own skin burning focused my mind here, and I threw the remnants of the letter to the floor in a spray of black ash. I opened Nyarathi's letter and read the delicate script. Her handwriting was much like mine. I wondered if this was because we grew up with the same instructors or because some genetic similarity. The words were misplaced, misspelled, and tangled like the scents of three different kitchens mingling. Most wouldn't be able to understand what she wrote beyond the few words of love and encouragement the correspondence contained. It was code, of course, a language only the two of us shared so that we could communicate in secret. Reading it came easy to me, and after many years of practice, I no longer required a separate piece of parchment to translate. Ayalarathi, Mother is furious that your father hasn't made any progress with you. As you know, she made a commitment to the Frethill tribe that either you or your offspring would mate with one of them in exchange for the Thoriel or trade agreement. Your father committed your first set of offspring to her, but he hasn't delivered on his promise. As foolish as it seems to be making these negotiations over reproductive organs, neither party has any control over. The end result is that our mother and your father are in debt to these tribes, and your delays are adding stress to their trade agreements. There is little love between your parents, but I know they have been communicating with each other since you arrived there. Soon they will find a way to force a suitor upon you. If you make a choice, you will have at least that amount of control over your fate. If you were dead, they might be released from their contracts. Perhaps these attempts on your life aren't coming from the elders. Gretnil made a fool of himself. The story is much too frustrating to tell, but you should know that he didn't just decide to visit you of his own will. I imagine he'll be asking you to stay for a while. You can trust him not to murder you, but he will be advancing Mother's agenda and push for you to find a suitor. I miss you, sister. Life here is quite uninteresting without you spinning everyone around in a tizzy. I understand your feelings about breeding, but I want you to come home. Please, just pick the strongest male there, let him inseminate you and be done with it. Your pride and stubbornness could cost you your life, and me, my only sister. Nyarathi. I read through the words two more times to ensure I captured whatever subtext my sister may have wanted to communicate. Then I burned this letter as I had my mother's, but without the anger. I could never get angry at Nyarathi, though we often disagreed. Everyone around me seemed to believe this problem was easy to solve. Pick a male, fuck him, and create some genetically superior offspring to strengthen the tribes. My mother would gain power, my father would gain power, and after producing three pairs of offspring, I would be left in peace. My sister did not understand my hesitation. I had tried to explain it to her, but she was more than eager and willing to breed, and perhaps a bit envious that I had so many eligible males vying for the chance to do so with me. They were all weak, stupid, and driven by their basest animal desires. They were obsessed with mating. All their pursuits and interests, everything they did or said was just meant to impress the vapid females who were incapable of forming their own opinions or ideas. Their pathetic courting attempts disgusted me. Everything about them disgusted me, and the idea of mating with any one of them made me feel physically ill. They reeked. Their musky, sour, dirty scent made my nose curl and my appetite wane. Most elvins had a repulsive scent, nowhere near as awful as a human, but still abrasive to my senses. My family smell was tolerable, but I had made all my female lovers bathe before we indulged in each other's bodies. The odor of some slobbering, over-eager male would be impossible to wash away. Or ignore. The thought of having two creatures growing in my womb also brought bile up to my mouth. I imagined them squirming inside of me, kicking, punching, and pushing on my organs for nearly 2 years until they ripped their way out of me in a shower of blood and screams. The females I had spoken to assured me that the experience, though painful, was enjoyable because of the special bond they developed with their offspring. Well, this would make it even more unpleasant, as any children I produced would not be mine to raise, but immediately be given to whatever tribe my mother and father had promised them to. Relyadra's knock sounded a second before she opened the door. My brother had changed into dust-free clothes and followed. While he trailed behind her, I saw his eyes wander to the beautiful woman's pert ass. The scent of his arousal drifted toward me, but Relyadra either didn't notice it or didn't care to acknowledge his lust, probably the latter.
"Please introduce me to your entourage, sister. It has been a time since I have met new females, and I long for fresh conversation."
He emphasized the last word and licked his lips at Relyadra, but the woman pretended not to notice again, and I didn't smell any sort of arousal from her. "It is possible they have already departed since I started my morning later than normal," I said. "I have already checked, mistress. A few have left to pursue other entertainment, but most are still downstairs in the garden." Relyadra smiled pleasantly at me, and I caught the scent of honeysuckles from her. "Fine. Let us go to the garden. Brother?" I rose from my chair and walked down out of my room with Grednil. The journey to the front of the manor took us a few minutes, and he commented on the construction of the house and the skills of the servants. I recall being just as surprised by the manor and its inhabitants when I first moved here, so I could not judge his reactions as idiotic. Finally, we opened the double stained glass doors to the garden and were met by my suitors and female entourage. 5 of the 6 usual males and 4 females were there, as always, to spend their day following me around, rather than pursuing their own interests. I assumed the females hoped to mate with whatever male castoffs I did not choose. Their fawning was embarrassingly insincere and irritated me almost more than the males panting after me. I knew they held no affection for me, and possibly would prefer that I was dead. Yet they acted as if we were close friends, and they adored everything I did and agreed with everything I said. This left me in the awkward position of having to pretend that I was stupid enough to believe that they cared about me, or having to confront their duplicitousness. I chose to do a little of both, testing and pushing them as far as I could by doing things I knew upset them, and seeing how much they would tolerate simply to win my favor. 9 of them lounged on stone benches arranged in a circle in the garden. Their light, flirty voices mixed with the drone of the bees, hummingbirds, and the trickling creek that fed a nearby pond. They all seemed to notice my entrance at once and rushed to be the first to greet me, creating a chaotic avalanche of sound and a stifling mix of scents.
"We heard that your half-brother arrived earlier this morning. Is this the famous Grednil?"
Riffthy took a step toward my brother and bowed deeply.
"Your sister has told us many great stories of your skill." "I am Riffthy, son of Elder Vuma."
"Pleasure."
Grednil nodded to the talkative elven. Vuma had changed his behavior since I threw him against the wall a few years ago with my magic. I still believed he was trying to assassinate me, but he now spoke to me with respect. Riffthy might have been interesting if he could shut his mouth for more than 30 seconds, though I doubted that he knew how to use his tongue for anything other than babbling. The group moved toward my brother and exchanged introductions.
"I am Bertalan, son of Elder Zarmo."
He was muscular, large, and always smelled of sandalwood oil. Bertalan was the best warrior of the males, but much like his father, he was not very smart. We often sparred together during my weapon training sessions, but his skill had not improved at a pace that I found acceptable.
"Alwar, son of Elder Uitra of the Ubadwa tribe."
My next suitor introduced himself. He smelled similar to the attackers from Ubadwa who had tried to either kill or kidnap me 2 years ago on my journey here. Elwar's skin was a ruddy red, and his hair color a darker shade of the same crimson. He was also a talented warrior, and while he wasn't as strong as Bertalan, he was skilled at magic as well. He spoke cleverly, and would have been my first selection for a mate if he didn't remind me of his treacherous kin.
"I am Fusik of the Laetiv tribe."
The silver-haired, cedar-scented man nodded to my brother. The Laetiv tribes were accomplished horse breeders and ranchers. They did not hold as much territory as the Ubarwa or my father, but their cattle, goat, sheep, and horse stock were prized. Fusik was the son of Laetiv's chieftain, and had offered to gift me with a few of his steeds, but I had declined.
Alatald, son of Chieftain Protocule. It is a pleasure to meet you, Gretnil.
He bowed slightly, and my brother returned the movement. Protocule was the smallest of the four tribes within 100 miles of Laxiel, and they would have the most to benefit from a relationship with my father's tribe. Alatald was soft-spoken and polite. I had not spent much time alone with him in the last few months, as he was not assertive enough to push for my attention. My brother turned to the females of the group, and they introduced themselves in the same manner. Daranyet, daughter of Ubarwa. The woman had hair the color of emeralds and eyes of bright blue sapphires. She was the daughter of Ubarwa's chieftain and outranked Alwar. She was a clever manipulator and delighted in driving the males to conflict. She had never said anything to oppose me, so I found her games amusing. Still, she was Ubarwa, and I trusted her less than Alwar. The males' desires were apparent. Why a female from the tribe would spend her time ingratiating herself with me was suspect. My brother returned the woman's bow and licked his lips to see if he could get a taste of her scented arousal. I couldn't smell anything from any of the women or men in the group, so I doubted he could either.
I am Iltaya, daughter of Protocule.
She was the first to make physical contact, raising her delicate hand so that my brother would grasp it carefully. The movement could have been seen as awkward, save that Alatald's sister moved with an uncanny grace. Like her brother, the woman was soft-spoken and had not been more than an observer during the months she had been with us. I was somewhat surprised she made her introduction so early. Perhaps she was very taken with my half-brother?
Hello, Gretnil. I am Kuntanya, daughter of Elder Oyman. You are quite attractive, and I am looking forward to spending time with you.
My brother broke eye contact with Iltaya and faced Kuntanya. The woman smelled of fresh lemons. The scent matched her yellow hair, which was almost white with sun bleach. I enjoyed Kuntanya's presence the most of all the females because of her delicious sense of humor, directness, and whimsical attitude. I had not enjoyed her enough to take her to bed yet, since I still found myself unable to trust any of the elders or their offspring.
I am Yerain, daughter of Elder Nyela.
The last of my females greeted my brother. All of the women were beautiful, but Yerain was as pleasing to the senses as Reliara. She smelled of strawberries and a musky scent that perhaps only I noticed. Her hair was a long cascade of gray-blue waves, and her skin was creamy, fresh milk. Her eyes were onyx, and their black depths couldn't hide her cleverness. Reliara had told me that before I came, Yerain had been the prize maiden of the tribe and had dozens of suitors every year. My father and Nyela had almost decided on a mate for her before I arrived and changed their plans. Of all the women in this group, Yerain would have the most to gain from my death.
We are missing Vertaris this morning. He heard you would be late, and he said he had a few other tasks to look after.
Ripthi informed me. I shrugged my shoulders. My last suitor was the son of Elder Delusit. He was involved in a secret project with the elders and only spent a few days every week with me. I had not bothered to ask him about his activities while our group was together, and we never spent any time alone. I did have to admit that I found the man somewhat intriguing. Everyone in my life fell over themselves to garner my attention, but Vertaris hardly seemed interested in breeding with me.
Enough about Vertaris. He thinks work is more important than we are. I am quite pleased to have the Singleborn's brother here. Tell me, Gretnil, what does Gentilis do for entertainment?
Daranyet asked my brother with a tilt of her head.
Gossip, mostly. Also games of combat, writing, art, music, hunting, and dancing as well.
He smiled, and I could tell my brother was trying to hide the scent of his arousal around the new women.
The Singleborn has been loath to talk about your mother's lands or tribal activities. Perhaps you can educate us on what her wicked hobbies were,
Kuntanya asked with a lilting laugh.
Don't be rude, Kuntanya. I'm sure that Gretnil doesn't want to spend his time talking about his sister, Yerain said with a bright laugh that matched the yellow-haired woman's.
The two were childhood friends, and while their verbal barbs seemed pointed, their sense conveyed that they held affection for each other. My sister did say that she has been unable to devote any time to her two favorite activities. I believe she fears boring you with her hobbies. Gretnell smirked and glanced sideways at me, while the men and women gave a collective gasp of shock. Perhaps it was a bad idea to allow him to interact with my entourage. But we would all be more than happy to indulge the single-born in whatever activities she finds amusing. Ripley was the first to comment, and the others quickly agreed. Although I was the subject of their conversation, they were gathered around Gretnell, and none seemed to care whether or not I was actually present. I longed to leave the sycophants to my brother, who seemed to actually be enjoying their attention. I could easily slip away, escape to the stables, and finally ride one of the beautiful steeds I had seen my father's servants training. The land here was ideal for riding. The horse's hooves would tear through the lush grasslands, releasing the sweet, heady aroma of freshly shorn grass and rich, churned earth. We thought she only enjoyed the martial arts and terrorizing the slaves. Do tell us what else she loves to occupy herself with. Darignette peered over toward me from the midst of the group and gave me an insincere smile before she turned back to my brother. In the gentlest lands, Ayalarathi was known to be exceptionally skilled with weapons, especially pole arms. Perhaps you all have not seen her wield her magic yet, but she is as strong as you might believe. Above all, she is an exceptional rider, and it tore my heart to pieces when I learned this morning that she has spent so little time atop a horse since coming here. At home, she would spend at least half of each day riding. The small crowd gasped and turned to face me with mixed expressions, scented of cucumbers and squash. "Why didn't you tell us about this, Ayalarathi? I would have loved to ride with you. My tribe is known for our equestrian skills. This is a hobby we can both share." Fusik's face was twisted in excitement and shock, but it was difficult to pull his scent from the group's mixture. "I also enjoy horseback riding and would find great pleasure in accompanying you on your daily excursions," Alwar interjected. The rest of the congregation agreed with his statement and began to talk amongst themselves, bragging about how skilled each was with a horse. "The chieftain's private stables are just a short walk from here. We should all go for a ride." Ripsy made the suggestion, and they turned to gauge my approval. "That is a fine idea, my new friend. Please lead the way," Gretnell said before I could decline, and the group began to migrate down the grassy hillside toward the stable house. I considered resisting. I wanted to ride, but I did not want to ride with them. The temptation to mount a horse and simply gallop away from them was already difficult to resist. Atop a horse, it would be nearly impossible. The men would distract me from enjoying myself by fighting for my approval and trying to show how skilled they were at riding, forcing me to indulge their egos and pretend I cared, when I could ride better than any of them without question. Instead of tempting me, it sounded exhausting and torturous. The walk was 5 minutes, and Gretnell spoke the entire time about the various clothing, dance, and musical styles popular in our mother's lands. He enjoyed having a captive audience, and, since he was not competition to breed with me, the other males of the group showed immediate affection toward him. Perhaps they also believed that he would make a recommendation for the male he befriended. Perhaps they believed I cared at all what Gretnell thought. "How long has it been since you have ridden?" Eltalia had fallen back from the others to walk beside me. Walking was too simple a term. The woman had a grace that made her almost float across the uneven ground. "Not since I arrived here," I matched her whisper. "Does your brother speak the truth, then?" She raised a glossy black eyebrow. Her hair was the color of polished onyx. "Yes, I have been busy with other tasks." I shrugged my shoulders. Perhaps I should have told her to keep the questions to herself, but I had already been through a few sets of suitors and females. My father was growing anxious that I wasn't making any progress in building relationships with the other tribes. "I have heard rumors of these other tasks you have been busy with." She glanced back to the rest of the group and dropped her voice a few decibels, though it appeared we were being ignored. "Is it true you had to fend off multiple assassins last month?" "I don't wish to speak of it." "Very well. You and I do not spend much time together. My goals are obviously different than my brother's. So if you want someone to confide in, please consider me an ally." "How benevolent and unselfish of you to offer. I'm sure you have nothing to gain." I almost laughed. Her scent became woodsy, and I wondered if she was actually being sincere.
Everyone wants something, Singleborn. I understand your hesitancy to trust me. I'm sure you have experienced much manipulation and duplicity from those posing as friends in the past. And yes, my brother and I are here because our elders want us to breed with someone of importance and facilitate advantageous treaties between our tribes. So of course I want your favor for my own ends. But I do not have any reason to wish you harm. And unlike my brother, I'm not here for your womb. Will you consider moving me to a room adjacent to yours? She finished brazenly as she looked at me with calm confidence. That is quite a bold request. My suitors, maidens, and their collective staff were housed in a different wing of the mansion than my own. There were empty rooms surrounding my suite, and I could show favor by moving certain people closer to me. But I had not chosen to do so. I enjoyed my solitude. I am feeling bold today. She turned to glance at my brother, and I caught a slight hint of her musky arousal, but it was quickly concealed. I believe no one else has asked you for your favor yet. Our tribe has little to offer when compared to our competition, but I can offer loyalty. Perhaps that will be useful to you in these dangerous times. I will consider your request. The arrival of my half-brother had probably pushed the timetable up a bit on the courting process. I wondered if my mother and father had planned this. Thank you. She smiled at me as we arrived at the stables. The familiar scent of wood, hay, leather, and horses greeted my nose when I stepped through the double doors, bringing with it thousands of pleasant memories of galloping unencumbered through the desert on the back of my favorite stallion. I smiled and felt grateful that my brother had engineered this activity. I really had missed riding. Another smell entered my nose, and I had to stop to inhale and appreciate it fully. It was a smoked scent of lavender, fresh pine, and other herbs mixed with a musky complexity. I tried to determine the source of the wondrous fragrance. It seemed to be everywhere within the stables.
Your father allowed me to keep a few of my steeds here. Perhaps you would like to ride one.
Fusick gestured to the end of the stables, where three magnificent stallions towered in their stalls. I doubted that the scent came from the horses. It had a hint of the world to it. So it must have been another elven who happened to frequent my stables. Today I will ride my own horse. I breathed deeply again and tried to ignore the hunger growing in my loins. Was this a male scent? I had never experienced anything like it, and I struggled to fight against my arousal. None of the other females in my group seemed distracted or smelled aroused. I wondered if it was so faint only I was picking it up with my acute senses. It must have been the lingering scent of an elven who was no longer here. As much as I wanted to ride, I was consumed by a need to find the elven who produced this scent. I approached my stallion. His coat was gleaming and clean. I had not seen the animal in 2 years, but his deep black eyes seemed to recognize me, and he stomped his front feet in anticipation. A ride would get me away from this fragrance and free my mind. I was finding it difficult to think of anything but the scent the longer we tarried in the stables.
Human, we will all need horses, Fusick commanded over my shoulder. Are you the only slave here?
Yes, master. I work alone in the stables. I will saddle them for you,
the human answered. It felt as if someone had thrown ice water on me. I could not think. My body felt as if I could no longer take in air. I grabbed onto the door of my horse's stable and felt my nails sink into the hard wood as if it was made of soft cheese.
Are you all right, Aelrathi?
Alwar moved next to me. He smelled of nutmeg and mint concern. I am fine. The seizure passed, but my arousal doubled. I turned away from my horse to face the entourage. They must have been able to smell my musk. It will take too long to wait on the human. Saddle your own horses. I walked over and grabbed my trusted saddle and blanket from the racks while my heart relaxed. They probably heard it beat frantically, but none of them commented. These idiotic males must each have attributed my arousal smell to themselves. I was embarrassed to have any of them think they had caused this reaction, but I could not conceal it. I needed to breathe fresh air soon. There was a scurry of movement and voices as the group decided on which horses each would ride. I set my saddle upon the stall door and attached the bit and bridle to my stallion's face. Then I entered the surprisingly clean stall and put the blanket and saddle on my steed. The tasks helped fight the effects the scent was having on my body. I tried to focus on the smell of the hay, the oiled leather of the saddle, the horse, but nothing could overpower the other scent. My entourage was still busy sorting out which horses to ride. I gritted my teeth and led my stallion out through the back end of the stable and into the large riding pen. As soon as I cleared the inside of the stables, I breathed deeply of the outside air. It smelled of fresh grass and damp dirt. Almost immediately, my body calmed. I hadn't realized the full extent the alien fragrance had on me. My nipples were hard and pressed up against the wool of my padded blouse. Even my vaginal entrance was wet, and the movement of the saddle against my riding pants stimulated the lips. My body ached for release. I stopped my horse from moving and inhaled 50 deep breaths until my body returned to a normal state.
"Forget how to ride, sister."
Grednell rode one of Fusik's stallions. I hadn't even heard him approach. "No, just waiting for you to join me." I managed to smile and hoped my scent was not so obvious now, out in the open air. "Oh." He gave me a puzzled look. Perhaps he sensed my lie. I had never shown him any sisterly affection or warmth. "Did you smell something out of place in the stables?" I nodded back to the wooden structure. All War, Darinyet, Bertalan, and Kuntanya were on horseback, slowly walking toward us, but probably still out of earshot. "What do you mean?" "There was a smoky scent that I have not tasted before," I whispered. Perhaps it was foolish of me to speak to him about the smell. I narrowed my eyes at him to indicate that I was not joking.
Your nose is more sensitive than mine, sister. Maybe there is a small leak into the stables from the back of the blacksmith's forge. They share a wall, no?
I nodded at his sensible explanation. The forge would explain the smoke, but not the sweet lavender, and that indiscernible yet intoxicating mix of herbal fragrances. I started to feel the effects of the scent again as I thought of it, and blew air out of my nostrils like my horse to stop the sensation. My stallion kicked the ground again, and I decided to indulge both of us with a canter. He launched from the standstill and seemed to fly across the diameter of the acre pen like a falcon. The rest of my entourage followed suit, and we spent the next few hours exercising our horses. It was no surprise that Fusik was the superior rider of the group. He had masterful control of his steed, and some of the jumping movements he could perform with the animal actually impressed me. The siblings from Protocule were also excellent riders, and while they were not as skilled as I, they were much better than the rest of my entourage. The worst rider was Yerain. It was painfully obvious that the beautiful woman had spent little time on a horse. Her face and scent betrayed her embarrassment. The males of my group quickly found her lack of skill enticing, and they all took turns riding next to her and offering advice. The memory of the scent in the stables continued to bother me. It lingered on my nose, or perhaps only in my mind, during the entire time we rode. Normally I would have enjoyed riding all day, but I grew weary of the scent and obsessing over its source. I was frustrated with the effects it was having upon me. I was not accustomed to losing control of my own body and urges, and that loss of power irritated me more than my unfulfilled desire. Without alerting my companions, I rode my stallion out of the pen and into the stable, dismounting before I entered the barn doors. "Where is the stable master?" The scent returned full force, and I staggered against its onslaught. I handed the reins to the human that greeted me inside when I asked my question.
"I do not know, mistress. She hasn't been in today."
The human was male, with dark, thick hair and strange-looking green eyes. They almost looked like the bright eyes of one of my people. I inhaled deeply again and felt my arousal scream through my body. "When was she last here?" My father's stable master and I had only spoken a few words to each other in the last year.
"Last week, mistress."
Most humans were terrified of me, and perhaps they had good reason to be. I detested their race and had insisted my father remove them from the mansion. He had allowed a few to serve in the other wings, but I did not allow any near me or my things.
I had killed a few during the first year of my stay when they passed me in the hall and caused me to retch with their nasty scent. Of course, dead humans tended to smell worse than live ones, but I had made my point to my father, and there were no longer any humans allowed to work inside the house. This human was not scared. He did not have the horrible human stench about him, either. Perhaps my senses were overwhelmed by the mysterious musky fragrance, and it was overpowering the reek of the stable boy. The smoky richness tickled the back of my throat, and my salivary glands stung and watered with hunger. I licked my lips again. Has any other of my kind been in the stables today? I had to find out who had left the scent. The human was still holding the reins of my horse.
No, mistress, you are the first I've seen today, or since last week when the stable master came.
It was hard to tell his age. All humans look so strange to me. He was probably half of my 40 winters, maybe a bit younger. I realized I was staring at him, and he seemed to realize it as well, and I tasted a small hint of sour fear escape from him. I suddenly understood what was causing the scent. It was this human.
Ooh, Ayalarathi,
a voice called from behind me. The sound felt like a slap, and I almost flinched. I looked over my shoulder and saw Bertalan dismounting 10 feet from me. I hadn't heard the animal approach.
Are you leaving?
The large man moved his horse next to mine. Yes, I'm tired of riding. I nodded to the human, and he gently tugged on the reins of my horse. The animal followed him to the pen.
Would you join me for lunch? Perhaps we can train our martial skills afterward.
I watched the human open the stallion's pen and lead it inside the stall. Within moments he had removed the saddle, bridle bit, and closed the pen door. Then he moved to do the same to Bertalan's steed. His hands moved efficiently across the horse's flank. I wondered what it would feel like for his rough fingers to touch my skin, to run down my stomach and into my entrance, probing and massaging me. I wondered what it would feel like to taste his mouth on mine. Would it be as delicious as his scent?
Ayalarathi?
What? I snarled at Bertalan. Damn, the dead gods I needed to fuck. Every part of my body felt aroused. I thought about demanding that the muscular dimwit let me ride him right now, but as soon as the idea sparked, it was gone. The human stood 20 feet from me, and the rest of my entourage was only a few hundred yards away. The large elven must have smelled my arousal. He was standing close enough to me.
Would you like to—
No, I am leaving. I tried not to run out the doors of the stables, but I only half succeeded. I had to get out of there. I needed to be free of the human scent and the presence of these suitors. I needed to clear my mind. Once I made it halfway up the shallow hill to the mansion, I risked a look back at the stables. I didn't see Bertalan or the rest of my entourage. My legs slowed their walk, and I considered returning to the stables. Maybe they had all left, and I could smell the human again. I could order him to do whatever I wanted. The fragrance still lingered in my nostrils, and I took a deep breath again. I had to kill him. Humans should not smell that way. He was an abomination. I didn't have my sword on my hip or even a dagger, but my nails were sharp enough to cut through his neck. Would his blood taste as good as he smelled? I forced my legs to move away from the stables, and I crested the hill toward the mansion. I was still painfully aroused. Blood pulsed between my legs, and I ached with longing. I needed release soon, or I wouldn't be able to concentrate on anything important. I almost screamed for Rel'Yadra as soon as I walked in through the front door. Her scent lingered near the stairwell, and I followed it to the kitchen. Come with me. I grabbed her arm and almost yanked her off the ground. What is wrong, mistress? She had been talking to servants in the kitchen about my dinner arrangements. Almost immediately I tasted her fear in the air like a bitter cheese. I turned to look at the beautiful woman, and she understood what I wanted. Once in my room, I slammed the door shut and Rel'Yadra locked the deadbolts. Do you wish for me to bathe first? She asked, since that was our usual routine. I didn't have time for that, and I silenced her mouth with my own. Then we were kissing, licking, and sucking on each other's tongues.
Her arousal musk wrapped around me like a blanket. I pulled off her blue dress with practiced ease, and she helped me quickly undo the leather knots of my pants and the ties to my satin blouse. On the bed, now, I commanded. The walk was short, and I took off the remainder of my undergarments on the way there and lay back against the pillows. Yes, mistress. What do you want me to do? She crawled onto the bed toward me with her ass in the air. Lick me. I opened my legs and pointed to my entrance. I was still wet from the scent in the stables. My lips were swollen and throbbing. Reliadra's hungry eyes only further aided my arousal. She smiled and then moved her face down to my spread legs. We were frequent lovers, and she knew exactly what to do. This time felt different, though. I had never been this aroused. Every small turn of her wet tongue across my opening or into the passage was more exquisite than anything I had ever felt. The sensation flared out and up from the lips of my entrance to my hips and then wrapped around my stomach. It didn't take long for my pelvis to rock upward against her mouth. Sex was almost like giving up control to someone else. My hips and legs were at the mercy of her lips, tongue, and the slender fingers that slid into me. Oh, I needed this, I muttered softly into my hand between moans. Reliata gasped appreciatively while she licked my wetness. I thought about the human in the stables. Perhaps he had been lurking in the back of my mind since I realized he was the source of the wonderful scent. I wondered what it would feel like for his tongue to touch me as Reliata's did right now. I imagined his hands sliding over my legs, hips, stomach, and nipples. My fingers reached down and grabbed a fistful of Reliata's silky blue-black locks. Would his hair feel the same in my grip? No. His was thicker, a bit lighter in shade, with some brown in the black instead of blue. Her tongue started to dart against my entrance quicker, and my body responded. I was no longer in control. It felt so good to not be in control of something for once. Humans were disgusting. Like pigs that could walk upright but still enjoyed wallowing in their own mud and filth. Yet this one seemed different. Why did he smell so wonderful? I inhaled again and could still smell the smoky scent of pine and lavender in my nose. I looked down in between my legs, and instead of Reliata, I imagined him licking me with abandon. Then he would sit up and slide his massive animal penis into my entrance. I let out a gasp and felt the first climax wave hit me. Reliata wasn't as strong as I was, so I had to be careful not to twist her head off with my legs. My body went numb, and I heard a deep scream echo in the room while I twitched with pleasure. She continued to lick and prod with her finger in me. The climaxes continued and crashed through me like boulders, each one faster and larger than the last. Finally, I gasped in submission and rolled away from her. My entrance clenched a few times in relief, and I thought again about the human entering me. Reliata moved up the bed and wrapped her arms around my waist. Her lips kissed the nape of my neck through my hair, and she murmured something soft in my ear. I sighed again. My body was relaxed and my arousal felt satisfied. "I was expecting this later tonight," she whispered. Reliata was always giving, and never asked for anything in return, which was especially good now because I didn't feel like indulging her at the moment. I was aroused. I could tell. What was attractive enough to do such a thing to the single-born? The question was innocent, but I wondered what assumptions she made. She must have been hopeful that I was finally feeling attraction toward one of my suitors. Reliata was not pressuring me in the way my family was, but she was concerned for my safety. A new breeding would give me some protection from the attempts on my life. We went to the stables. I had forgotten how much I enjoyed riding. Cancel all my appointments for the rest of the day. I don't wish to see anyone else. Very well. She slid out of bed and ran her hands through hair that looked like dark ocean water. You should go horseback riding every day.
She smiled, and I caught a slight peach scent from her. I think I will. She nodded and moved into the foyer of my suite. I heard her pick up her clothes and begin to put them back on her slender body. I rolled over till I flat on my bed and enjoyed the complete relaxation that spread through my muscles. The incident with the human scent was just an oddity. I doubted that the fragrance would be there tomorrow morning when I went riding. Perhaps I really did need to choose a mate. My body was urging me to breed. I closed my eyes and tried not to think of the human. But when I attempted to remove his face from my memory, I thought about others of his kind and then circled back to him. Rariara, I called into the room before she could leave.
Yes, mistress?
Vertatus is involved in some workings with my father and the other elders. I normally wouldn't care about the foolish games of idiots, but something made me think of it just now.
I have not heard anything.
Find out all you can without raising suspicion.
Yes, mistress.
She turned to go. Oh, and Rariara?
Yes, mistress?
She turned to me. After dinner tonight, you will be my dessert.
Chapter 10 The O'Barney. Leave us, Alexia's voice echoed down the hallway and leaked under the door of my cell. I raised my head from where it rested against the stone floor and tested my arms against the manacles that bound my wrists to the wall. They held, as they had 1,000 times before when I tried to rip them free. I didn't hear her footsteps, but her stealth could not keep the key from ratcheting in the lock or the door scraping along its metal hinges as it opened. My friend looked the same as she had yesterday. She wore a form-fitting outfit of suede pants and a pale blue satin blouse. The shirt was a few shades lighter than her blue eyes. Her now long blonde hair was braided down one side of her pretty face and fell in front of her chest. She closed the door behind her and regarded me for a few moments in silence. Alexia had always been guarded with her feelings, and I was still unable to gauge any emotion from her face. Finally, I grew tired of her stare, and I opened my mouth to ask her what she wanted. "If you exit this cell and make a sharp right, there is a stairway." She cut me off with a soft whisper. "Two flights down is another hallway lined with cells. At the end of the hallway, there is a sewage chute. The maintenance staff accidentally left it pried off." "Why are you telling me this?" I kept my voice the same whisper as hers. "The sewage chute is only a few feet in diameter, and will be slick with slime left over from flooding, but it feeds into a waste cavern beneath the city. If you exit northward, it will feed into the river. On the shore of the river, you'll see a rotted log with a red scarf around one of the limbs. Enter the forest there, and you'll find two horses and equipment to travel." "How will I get out of the manacles?" I nodded to my wrists. My heart was galloping like a racing colt's. "If you were to ride those horses for 3 months bearing southeast, you would come to the War Ocean." I nodded. The body of water had once been named the Black Ocean, but the elvens and my people were not skilled at sailing or versed in methods to navigate by water. It was said that there was land on the other side of the vast ocean, but the legends could have been false. There were many human communities that we saved on the coast that had never seen any sort of vessel on the water. We called it the War Ocean, as it marked the end of the world we fought for. "There is a city there named Grenegal. Do you remember it?" she asked. "Yes. For the past 3 years, they have been crafting a vessel that can sail the ocean waters. The ship will be ready for you when you arrive." "Exile?" I asked. Perhaps my heart sank a bit. "Would you prefer Shlara's treatment?" She raised an eyebrow. "What of the elven woman?" I hesitated to ask. Alexia stared at me for a few moments and then sighed. "What if I were to meet you at Grenegal?" "What do you mean?" "We would be on the ship together. The thought of sailing across the unknown waters does cause me some fear, but I would risk it to be with you. Her face broke, revealing a vulnerability I had never seen from the woman. Shlara had often told me that Alexia had feelings for me, but I never gave much weight to the words. I have questions. I strained my ears and didn't hear anyone walking down the hallway toward us. Of course, I had not heard Alexia either. There is not much time. Do you love me? I asked the obvious question. I did, long ago.